is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Henry Sikorski, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, writing most recently at the Washington Post, recommendations about nuclear weapons in the 21st century tangle of Eurasian wars and threats to our allies in the East Asia and the Western Pacific. Henry, a very good evening to you. We begin with your recommendations in the Washington Post, and I want to add two news items in these last days that may be complicating the straightforward recommendations you make. One is that the Ayatollah in Iran, some 96 hours ago, said that he was open to talks. This on the eve of the IAEA meeting in Vienna, September 9th, I believe is the date, to discuss what clearly looks to be Iranian violations of their promises about the fissile material that they're capable of advancing to weapons grade. At the same time, we have the new president of Iran, Pezeshkian, said to be offering to talk. And at this headline, the head of the UN's nuclear watchdog, that's Mr. Grossi, soon is to visit Iran soon for talks with the newly elected president. Iran is suddenly talking from the Ayatollah to the presidency. I'm presuming that this is because of the IAEA. It might also be that they're on the doorstep of having enough fissile material. Your first recommendation in the Washington Post involves where we are right now. You want a report. To what end, Henry? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, as we discussed it last week, and again, it is a privilege to be on your program. We are in denial that trying to please and squeeze the Iranians not to produce a bomb may no longer be the main event, that we need to actually prepare for at least something as probable, and that is that they're going to get it, and that either they'll announce that they have it or it'll be known that they have it. That day after is something that we are not thinking about, and clearly the Iranians and even the IAEA, and I'm sure the various candidates don't want us to think about that. They want us to believe that we can somehow scare or service the Iranians not to proceed. I think that's imprudent because it doesn't seem as probable now, given how close they clearly are. I would say a screwdriver's turn away from a nuclear weapon.
The report, Henry, what do you want to happen immediately within 30
Well,
days?
Immediately, whoever becomes president ought to just simply take three people at the recommendation of whoever is loses the White House and is the senior most official of that party in Congress, give them three choices. Then the president, whether they're Democrat or Republican, gets three choices. Get six people, give them 30 days, please don't pay them, and ask them, well, what should we do? Here are some questions. Please try to answer them. Should we try to prevent other countries nearby and far afield watching from getting nuclear weapons, and how? Or should we help countries get very close to getting nuclear weapons? A related issue is, do we give assistance to the Saudis and MBS to get right within a whisker's distance from getting nuclear weapons by helping them enrich uranium on their soil or not? This is something that both Trump and Biden have entertained. Is it a good idea anymore? All of these things need to be tackled. Even if there isn't an agreement amongst these six, you need to get a debate going and start talking about these things. We are evading thinking about tomorrow and the day after Iran gets a bomb. South Korea has been chomping at the bit. Poland even has raised the specter that it wants to get weapons. Surely if Iran gets that, nuclear weapons, all of these countries, plus Turkey, Egypt, the UAE, Japan, will be absolutely focused on this question themselves. We better get ahead of that.
You also recommend that Congress and the new chief executive, come January, not go forward with conversations with Saudi Arabia about a nuclear power plant. Why not, Henry?
I didn't say that. What I said is we need to review whether we should give assistance for them to enrich uranium. Now, had you pressed me personally, I would question whether they need nuclear power as well. But I didn't go that far because I don't think people are capable of thinking that complete thought. But at least we should ask, should we help them enrich uranium on their soil? I think that we shouldn't. But for gosh sakes, let's review it. Let's see what people say, but get that issue in front of people. I think debate has some merit. It's kind of like the jury system. But if you don't have jury, you don't have justice. And if you don't have debate and discussion, you probably don't have self-government. We need to have self-government at a minimum here, even if we pick the wrong course of action.
If there is a nuclear power plant anywhere, let's say Saudi Arabia, does that mean there's also always the possibility of producing bomb-making material?
Yes, and for both direct reasons, because it can produce plutonium and it can be filched and chemically stripped out without a lot of complication, but also for a complicated reason, and that is, if you know what happened in Iran, they used their power plant project, which was peaceful and inspected, as a covert venue to buy and procure everything they needed for Natanz, which is their enrichment facility. And not only that, but they used that peaceful power plant procurement venue to get things to help them perfect nuclear weapons. So, yeah, it's a real problem. I'm much harder nosed than most of my friends that nuclear power is not for everybody, because some of the people that want it want a bomb.
We move to another recommendation, which is to do with civilian nuclear commerce, allied and U.S., but at the same time, Chinese and Russian. Are we making money from the Chinese and Russians on nuclear power?
I don't think we're making any money that matters. Westinghouse has sold some reactors to China. Our utilities are buying cheap, enriched and regular uranium from Rosatom. But essentially, that commerce bolsters Russian and Chinese bomb making, because the entities in question, Rosatom and Chinese National Nuclear Corporation, that we're engaged in commerce with, or our Canadian friends are the bomb-making entities in those countries. So when they make money, they make bombs. And we're still in denial that we're part of the problem. I think you got to cut that nut. And the hope would be is that if you had that as a debate issue and did the right thing, you might start thinking about what the civil-military nuclear fusion possibilities are in other places that countries are playing around with nuclear fusion. Now, not everybody is doing this. And you know, with countries that aren't, you do commerce. But with ones that are, you really need to be far more suspicious of what's going on than we are.
Is the fact that Canada's involved in this recommendation, does that complicate the matter? You report that Westinghouse is now a wholly owned Canadian-owned entity. Is that a complication?
Well, it might be, but you know what? There's no time like the present to make it simpler. And the way you make it simpler is you start talking about it. People do not understand that we've let Canada sell China's National Nuclear Corporation, the key vendor of nuclear weapons for China, one of the world's largest sales of uranium. We don't talk about how two of their reactors, Chinese, are being assisted in operation by the Canadians. And the Pentagon has pretty much identified these machines as the source of tritium for thermonuclear weapons that China makes. I mean, this is just insane. You just have to start speaking up and saying, enough, that we should not do. That is not peaceful nuclear cooperation.
Now we come to the question of selling to Russia. and buying from Russia nuclear-related materials. And I'm thinking of especially of yellow cake. I've known that that's a major source of income for the Russian war machine. Is that a conversation in Washington?
It is, but it's a very backhanded one. We have passed legislation that would have you believe that we've cut off that commerce, but we haven't. There is a very large portion of that legislation, which Mr. Biden signed and the Republicans back, that allows utilities to continue to buy for quite a few years. I think that's nonsense. The amount of money that the nuclear electricity costs coming out of the plug in your house attributable to nuclear fuel is very small. Very small. We're talking about a few percentages. So while the utilities are eager to make money and want to save every nickel, we should probably say, no, that's false economy. No. You'll have to buy from Canada. You'll have to buy from Australia. You'll have to buy from other places.
And finally, you recommend, well, in this iteration, you recommend that the deploying of nuclear weapons to allies, in the case, in the instance I'm thinking of, the deployment of nuclear weapons from Russia to Belarus, be either enforced, the prohibition of that, or inspected, which is wiser? And is that redeployment something that already is at the IAEA's desk? Are they already seeking the Belarusian redeployment?
The IAEA has no business and does not engage in any way on these issues. These issues are coming up in the lead up to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Review Conference in early 26. We've had preparatory meetings, and we are hearing the Russians and Chinese beat the drum and win the allegiance of the developing world to the arguments that the United States is about to deploy nuclear weapons or nuclear weapons capabilities to Japan and South Korea. How dare they? And it's just outrageous that America has nuclear weapons in Europe. Never mind that the Russians have redeployed to Belarus. We only have 100 weapons in all of NATO, for God's sakes. And in Asia, we're not interested in redeploying. We might be forced to because the Japanese and South Koreans are flipping out by what the North Koreans and Chinese are building up. But it's not our first preference for even military reasons. These things are, if you put nuclear weapons on the ground, it becomes an enormous target that's got to be protected. It's not logistically a preferable way to go.
Henry Sikorsky is the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. Recommendations in the Washington Post. We turn next to a secret Soviet military space station program in the 1970s. And perhaps its analog here in the 21st century. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.